Today's episode in the story of the early church is about how your plans don't always work out the way you may want them to. It's a story about how the unexpected surprise may change things. Today we're telling the story about a surprise twist that radically changes not just the early church, but it shocked a stubborn disciple. It moved, in fact, the course of history. And it may change the way you think about things. Today we're telling a story about how little we actually know ahead of time. And maybe most importantly, this is a story about how God's plans aren't your plans. Now, the episode picks up in a setting with a character. Let me just remind you of both of them so you understand the story a little better. The setting is first century Judaism. It's in Palestine. Now, if you know the Israelite history at all, it's a group of people who for a long time were under the harsh thumb of the abusive, unjust Roman Empire. And to back up even further in the Israelite story, if you read the Bible, you probably know that up until this point, non-Jews, for the most part, were always the enemy of the Jewish people, even if it looked like different things. With a couple exceptions. Like sometimes in the Israelite story, the big danger from the outsiders was assimilation. Like there was a danger by peer pressure. And the Israelites would want to be like the other nations, and they'd compromise ethics and morals and all that. You may know the story of like Solomon or Ahab. It's not like there was a danger from guys with weapons marching into town. It was a danger of peer pressure. It was keeping up with the Gentile Joneses was the problem. And what happened in lots of part of the Old Testament is that culture crept in and kidnapped hearts. You may think about the book of Leviticus and all the purity laws. They all have the same goal, keeping Israelites and non-Israelites separate, which in the Bible affects how you eat, how you dress. The Israelites were called to be different. And you probably know a little about this. There's obviously differences in the last several thousand years, but even today, if you walk around Orange County, you can probably still tell how being a Hasidic, which is just a word that means pure or holy, good Jews don't assimilate with non-Jews. They're sort of the enemy from the Old Testament. If you're a Orthodox Jew, you may find yourself avoiding people who are different. There's a danger in assimilation starting all the way back in the Old Testament. Now, that was part of the issue. A lot of times, though, the different non-Jewish people was more adversarial. So there wasn't just a peer pressure issue. There was a, like, battle thing going on. You may think, like, Joshua and Jericho or David and the Philistine. There's lots of times in the Bible where it was literally war against non-Jews who hate God. Sometimes, though, it was actually a bit worse. For lots of the Bible, there was adversarial relationship, there was a war, and the Jews lost. Think the Babylonians, or the Greeks, or the Romans. There were battles fought with real weapons, and God's people lost. And the Israelites, for hundreds of years, this is our setting, by the time you get to the first century, they had experienced being killed, pillaged, raped, literally kidnapped. Well before the birth of Christ, if you know Jewish history at all, Antiochus Epiphanes marched in with an army, defeated Jerusalem, famously went into the temple, marched through that curtain in the Holy of Holies, took a live pig and slaughtered it on the altar, pig blood everywhere in the Holy of Holies because he hated God. Now, the story we're telling today takes place in a third setting here. Antiochus was long gone, but the Greeks and now the Romans for years, hundreds of years, had fought against and oppressed Israel, and there were killings, there was slaughtering, there was torture, and because of that, every first century Jew had strong opinions about Romans, especially Roman soldiers. They were not good people. They're the ones that sacrificed a pig on the altar in the temple. They were, and it's true, they were using and abusing the Jewish nation. I wish they would all die would be a common thought for every first century Jew. Barely masked hatred was justifiable, perhaps, describe the relationship between worshipful Jewish people in the first century and Roman sentries that hate God. That is the setting of our story. It takes place among people in antiquity who thought like that. But it's not just about every Jewish person in the first century. It's more narrow than that. Because we're watching the story of, you know, just a very small episode of the first century. It's the early church in the months after Jesus was executed, and his disciples were running away. They were scattered because they're worried about persecution. You may know Jesus was tried by the Jewish leaders, but he was executed by the Roman government. And the Gospels don't tell a lot of stories about the Roman government, but we know at least a centurion was part of murdering Jesus. Jesus was executed by Roman soldiers. He was kept in a Roman prison. He was tortured by Roman soldiers who hated God. And or at least that's what the early church would have thought. That's our setting. Like it or not, that's what people were like. But the story is not about everybody. It's about someone named Peter. Peter's mission, his plan, was to build a church in Jerusalem. Now, when we get to this part of the story, he's not in Jerusalem. He's a refugee. Do you know why he is a refugee? Because he was running away from Roman soldiers. In fact, the last time he saw a Roman soldier, as far as we know, the centurion was executing Jesus. Or actually, that's speculation. Maybe he saw the Roman prisons where the Roman soldiers tortured and executed, and sometimes, like, maybe they even captured some of Peter's friends. Like, that's why Peter ran away from Jerusalem. And I will point out, too, if you're following along, Peter finds himself in the town of Joppa. And you know why he was in Joppa, right? He was running away. He was trying to do whatever he could to avoid Roman soldiers because they're in Jerusalem. And Peter was trying to get as far away as he could from the possibility of getting arrested, jailed, tortured, and executed by Roman soldiers. Peter's a refugee at this point. If you read the end of chapter 9, you'll find he's just sort of couch surfing, trying to make sure no one could track him down. Actually, if you're a Bible student, you may know the name of the city of Joppa. You recognize that city? That's where Jonah tried to leave to run away, right? God sent him somewhere, and Noah goes to Joppa. And to be fair, Peter didn't want to run away. He wanted to stay in Jerusalem, but he had to survive. His plans didn't work. That's where our plans pick up. This is where our story picks up. And I almost think about how movies work, right? And the camera is zoomed in on Peter and Joppa. We just read the end of chapter 9. Peter is like trying to stay under the radar. He's avoiding the authorities. He didn't really tell anybody where he's going. And you've seen the cameras do this in movies, right? The story, the camera goes from Peter, like St. Peter, who's running away because his plans aren't working. He's running away from Roman soldiers. And then the camera takes you, the watcher, into the living room of all things, a Roman soldier. In fact, here's the setup. Acts chapter 10, at Caesarea, there was a man named Cornelius, a centurion in what was known as the Italian regiment. And everybody reading the story for the first time knows exactly what to expect. Like, we've just seen the good guys, now we're going to see the bad guys. Like, if I were shooting this as a film, if you're watching this, it would switch from the bright shots of the inside of the house and like nice happy music and strings, and you always know when you watch a movie when it's going bad, right? It'd get darker, the music would change, and you saw the outside of a Roman outpost. And you see the sinister looking guards, weapons brandished with armor and maybe even instruments of torture in the background. And you see guys over there, they're marching and they're training, and the music changes and the camera gets darker and it gets really tense. And that's where our story picks up, with the tension, the anticipation. And we hear about this guy named Cornelius, which of course is a Roman name, and he's a centurion. He's a soldier in charge of a bunch of other soldiers. The last time we saw one of these guys, it was right after Jesus was killed by a Roman soldier. And you don't really have to use much imagination to know what Peter thinks about this scene. Peter knows exactly what to expect to find in the last place in the world that he would like to look. Like, this is Peter's greatest nightmare, right? To walk inside those scary walls because he knows it's not going to end well. Here's how the story goes. This is scary. At Caesarea, there was a man named Cornelius. He was a centurion in what was known as the Italian regiment. He and all his family were, wait, what? They're devout? This can't be right. This is a typo. And they were God-fearing. This isn't how the story is supposed to go. And he gave generously to those in need, and he prayed to God regularly. Like, if this is the first time you've heard this story, you'd be like, what in the world is going on here? This doesn't happen. Any first century Jewish person wouldn't believe this could happen, especially Peter. So here's the story. Unbelievable as it sounds, at about 3:00 in the afternoon, which is the time when most devout people prayed, Cornelius had a vision. He distinctly, the story says, saw an angel of God who came to him and said, Cornelius. Cornelius, it says, stared at him in fear. What is it, Lord? He asked. The angel answered, your prayers and gifts to the poor have come up as a memorial offering before God. Now send men to Joppa to bring back a man named Simon, who is called Peter. He's staying with Simon the tanner, whose house is by the sea. And that is all God tells Cornelius. No details about who Peter was or why Peter wasn't in Jerusalem. Nothing about why Peter knew about Jesus or why he might be afraid of stories. Why might he be afraid of soldiers? Sometimes God only gives you your next step, not the whole story. So us couple call verses. At noon the next day, when they're on their journey and approaching the city. So to be clear, the they is some of Cornelius's soldiers, and they're marching to Joppa, and they know the exact GPS coordinates to find Peter. They have no idea why they're taking him. And to be clear, don't forget, they're Roman soldiers, and they're in their armor, and they've got their weapons, and they've got everything they'd normally bring with them. And if you're an Israelite, who's running away from Roman soldiers, right? That's what Peter's at. And soldiers are already trying to get you in Jerusalem. Soldiers coming to get you is exactly what Peter is afraid of. So this is not good. Soldiers coming to get Peter and knowing where he lives is Peter's greatest nightmare. This is not his plan. Fortunately for Peter, I guess, he has no idea what's going on. Because at the same exact time, the story tells us, the camera takes us back to Peter. Peter goes up to the roof to pray. And the detail says it's about noon, and 3:00 is a normal prayer time. Noon is it's not the normal time. Noon is a little extra prayer time. Noon is when Peter would pray when he's really worried and got to talk to God about stuff. But you know about Peter, right? From the Gospels, he's not really into fasting and praying. Remember, here's a guy who's supposed to pray in the garden, and he doesn't pray. Remember what he does? He falls asleep, right? This is actually, like, for me, it's a little funny because Peter goes to pray, but he's hungry. So he orders some food. So this is hilarious to me. So while the meal was being prepared and he was praying, you know what Peter does? He can't really seem to stay awake. He has a dream, which means he probably fell asleep. Jesus already talked to him about this, but habits die hard, I guess. Anyway, he saw heaven opened and something like a large sheet being let down to earth by its four corners. And it contained all kinds of four-footed animals, as well as reptiles and birds. And then a voice told him, get up, Peter, kill and eat. Surely not. No, no, no. Surely not, Lord, Peter replied. I have never eaten anything impure or unclean. The voice spoke to him a second time. Do not call anything impure that God has made clean. And this happened, the story tells us, happened three times, and immediately the sheet was taken back up to heaven. This is a disturbing story for Peter. Peter's a good Jew. He's a hungry Jew in this case. And hungry Jews have laws, I guess. There's lots of laws in the Old Testament. Certain kinds of people are clean, some are not. Different kinds of food are clean and unclean. Eat sheep, don't eat bacon, right? And he has this crazy dream where God sends him like a baconator, and he's just looking at it like there's a bun and there's meat and there's cheese and there's bacon, and Peter's like, no, that's not kosher. I've never had that stuff. I've always stayed away from unclean things. Like, I've already got an order in for bagels and matzo ball soup. Peter's going, bacon is not on the list of things I can do. And God says, look, don't call what I made clean impure. And God says it three times. Get up, try something new, be a little surprised. More or less, I've got a plan you don't know about. And three times Peter says, nope. And three times God says, look, God just doesn't make mistakes. And three times, and you may know, if you know anything else about Peter, you might know that getting asked the same question three times is sort of his thing, right? And Peter wakes up, and he doesn't wake up because his kosher meal is ready. He gets woken up because there's soldiers, and there's soldiers at the gate, and they're armed. They're in uniform, and their weapons are rattling. You kind of hear this stuff coming down. And they're asking for Peter like they know where he lives. And probably like his friends are like, have figured this out. So they're probably like, Peter who? Right? I don't know any Peter. You don't have any warrant. We've got a gate. You could try and starve us out, but we just made bagels, so we're good for a while. Like, this is not Peter's plan. This is Peter's greatest nightmare. This is what Peter was planning on avoiding, right? He's running away from the Roman soldiers, and they've shown up. And I don't want to say Peter's a little bit dense. I think we're all a little bit dense. But to be honest, I'm not sure how this story would have gone down if God speaking in his head hadn't made it additionally obvious. Like, you have the next verse, right? 19. While Peter is still thinking about the vision, what's going on here? Who's going where? The Spirit tells him, look, Simon, three men are looking for you, so get up, go downstairs. Do not hesitate to go with them, even if you want to hesitate to go with them. For I, God, have sent them. And you got to figure what Peter's thinking here. It's like, oh no. All right, so God doesn't make mistakes. God made people. And God just sent soldiers to get me. Thanks, God. That's like the opposite of what I was praying here, right? And maybe Peter's going, all right, God has a plan. I don't know, Jesus died as part of God's plan. Maybe I'm just supposed to surrender peacefully with these soldiers. And man, I really didn't want to be crucified. But okay, God, here we go. So, verse 22, Peter goes down and says to the Roman soldiers with their swords and their armor and their, I imagine, handcuffs and all that. Peter's like, I'm the one you're looking for. Here I am. Why are you guys here? And you almost think, like, I imagine what Peter's thinking. He's going, I was going to hide under that bed or something. I thought about running away, but man, this is not my plan. This is a massive disappointment. Because these are Roman soldiers. These are the people who defeated Israel. They hate God. But God really wants me to go with you guys, so just cuff me and take me where I need to go. And verse 22 says, I mean, these are soldiers, right? They say, we have come from Cornelius the centurion, which is bad news, not another centurion. He is a righteous and God-fearing man. And you think like Peter's still like, oh no, not a centurion. Wait, what? You're a God. What's going on here? Really, this guy, it says, is respected by all the Jewish people. In fact, a holy angel told Cornelius to ask you to come to his house so he could hear what you have to say. At this point, Peter is probably thinking, you know, last time this happened, I cut off the guy's ear with my sword. Good thing I didn't do that this time. You probably could have knocked down Peter with a feather at this point. Next verse, Peter invites the men, the soldiers, into the house to be his guest. Then the next day, Peter started out with them, and some of the believers from Joppa, the story says, went along. And I'm not going to read the rest of the story for you. It's amazing, though. Because Peter, who's running away from the law, trying to do everything he could to avoid seeing the inside walls of a Roman garrison, he does exactly what he was planning on not doing. He walks to the town where the Roman guards were, walked past the scary guards, went to the front door of the biggest house. And I'm not going to read it. You can read it later. But the man in charge of like 500 men falls down on his knees. And Peter has to go, look, don't worship me. Worship Jesus. This is not what Peter had planned. But Peter learned something that God had to teach him. And maybe God wants to teach us too. Peter's a little bit slow. Maybe we're a little bit slow, but like when he gets it, he gets it. This is verse 28. Check it out. Peter said to them, so he's talking to the Jewish believers that came with him. He's talking to the Roman guards and the centurion. You are well aware. Like everybody knows, it's against the law for a Jew like Peter to associate or visit with a Gentile like you. But God has shown me that I should not call anyone impure or unclean. So when I was sent for, I came without raising any objections. Can I just ask, why in the world am I here? Like, why did you send me for me? And Cornelius tells the same story you already heard. 3 days ago, I was praying at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and suddenly a man with shining clothes appeared to me and said, Cornelius, God has heard your prayer and remembered your gifts to the poor. Send to Joppa for Simon, who is called Peter, and gives him the GPS coordinates. And Cornelius sent the soldiers from immediately and says, it was good for you to come. Now look, we're all here in the presence of God, and here's what I really want. I want to listen to everything that the Lord has commanded you to tell us. It's amazing. And Peter, once he figures out that he's not arrested, does the work of picking his jaw up off the floor. Because sometimes God's plans don't look anything like your plans. And sometimes, every once in a while, we get to see how much better God's plans are when things don't go the way you would plan. Sometimes God just surprises you. And look, in Peter's case, sometimes in your case too, I'll bet, being surprised feels a lot like disappointment. When your greatest nightmare comes true, it's scary, it feels horrible and uncomfortable. The irony of God's sovereignty is sometimes a good outcome feels frightening. And if you ever feel like, look, I'm planning to do this, but whoa, that didn't work out. Like, when is happening feels scary, I think God may have something for you to learn too from this episode. I'm gonna give you a couple points briefly here, but here's what I think God is teaching Peter and is teaching us today. Number one, this is a big theme. And it keeps going on throughout the New Testament. There is a danger of thinking that you know people, assuming things about them, when you really don't know about them. Peter saw a Roman soldier and assumed what generations of people got hundreds of reasons to think about Roman soldiers. He assumed the Roman soldier hated God, was abusing people, and wanted to put Peter in prison. You know what God saw, though? God saw a Roman soldier and saw someone who loved God and needed Peter to preach a sermon, which is a very ironic twist, right? But you need to know, because it's still true today, God surprises people with people. And sometimes what you're afraid of is actually a blessing you're avoiding, because sometimes what you want isn't actually good for you, and what God has for you is. And this isn't just true in this story, right? You know, this God is like an all-knowing, loving father, and we're all like little kids who have no idea what's going on. You get that analogy if you're a parent of little kids, right? If you're a parent, you spend a lot of time working through all the details, like you've got good plans, and you try and tell your kids, and they kick and they scream, but most of the time, we're like the little kids. God has something for us, and we're kicking and screaming because we're unhappy about what's going on. Or we don't like the people who succeed or fail, or the news looks hard, or our plans just don't work out. You need to know this story, that your Father is sovereign and in control. And even when you might freak out a little bit from something as extreme as Roman soldiers knocking on your door, taking you away when you're trying to run away from them, God just might surprise you. God's got better plans for you than what you're afraid of. And when you get surprised by sovereignty, like Peter did, you should do what Peter did. You see what Peter did when he was surprised? Look at verse 28. Peter says out loud, but God has shown me that I shouldn't call anyone unclean. You see what Peter says here? Peter, Saint Peter. Peter, like, writes books of the Bible, Peter. Peter spent time with Jesus, learned something new about God. As long as you're alive, God can show you things. You never understand everything about God. And God will always show you things because God is bigger than you. And every now and again, if you're growing as a Christian, you should say what Peter said. I was wrong. God taught me something. God's right. It's called repentance. It's a very worshipful thing to do. When you find yourself surprised, when you have to change your direction, when you change your mind, it's a sign that you're seeing how big our great God is. One more thing that I want to show you from this. This is point three. I want you to think about when God shows up and teaches people things. You know what Peter's doing at really important parts of the story? You know what Cornelius is doing at important parts of the story? Well, they're ordering lunch, but they're also praying, right? On purpose, with or without ordering some meals, right? This is really important. Because I think sometimes when you get to point one and point two, when you see how big God is, sometimes you actually pray less. Because you go, look, God is sovereign. I'm wrong. I'll spend less time telling God what to do. That's really natural. But in the Bible, the opposite happens. People see how big God is and they're motivated to pray. And God, in this story and in your life, God does stuff when you pray. In fact, this is hilarious. Even when you're praying for the wrong thing, God still shows up. Like, I imagine Peter praying the dumbest things. Like, I imagine Peter going, okay, dear God, please hide me from the Roman soldiers. Make sure they can't find me. Keep them far away from here. God, can you blind them to my location? Can you make sure none of the Roman soldiers find me and help me to never get to a Roman soldier's house. Amen. Like, that's what he's praying, right? And the funny thing is, God shows up and, like, literally does the opposite of what I picture Peter saying, because I think God's got a better plan. And sometimes you do that too, right? But the story teaches you that maybe it really doesn't matter what you're praying for. Prayer is the way that God gives people so many of the unimaginable things God has for us. Like, think about that. Prayer is how God gives us things that we couldn't even imagine that he's got for us. This is a great story. And here's what I believe God is teaching all of us. We need to hear this. God's plans are surprising. Your plans might be wrong. And the way to navigate through that is prayer. I'll say it again. God's plans are surprising. Yours might be wrong. And the way to pass through all this is prayer. And if that's true, maybe what we should do is rest in God's power. Maybe we could worry a little bit less, maybe love people a little bit more, and pray to God an awful lot. So let's do that right now. Father in heaven, I pray that you would, like you did for Peter, may you bring us good things. May you bless us, even if it's cleverly disguised. Can you give us hope where we don't see any? Can you give us a blessed future that we can't even imagine or picture right now? And Father, might that all start with you taking our lives and let them be consecrated wholly to you. Father, can you give us faith and hope? Can you help us to trust you, even though we may get nervous about where you're leading? And may you protect us as we seek your face. I ask all this in the name of Jesus. Amen.